Join us now for Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten.
Today we'll be talking to William Hebert, Executive Director of Marriage and Family Counseling, but not in that capacity. Bill is also a Methodist minister and a writer of sermons. Garrison Keillor follows with the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. And we'll begin right away with saying hello to Bill Hebert. It's been a while.
Good day to you. Yeah.
Bill, before we even start talking about writing, and you've got an interesting angle on writing because most of your writing ends up not as publishing but as a sermon or a presentation or a workshop or something like that. But you have probably one of the most interesting, varied, zigzag backgrounds of anybody that either Don or I know. Do you want to just take us through that briefly? I heard you give a talk once in which you claimed that even though it appears to zigzag, everything fits, and it all came together.
Well, I was raised in the same Mennonite community you were, Roald.
Right.
I went to a Lutheran seminary. I was ordained a Methodist. I taught for 33 years at the Presbyterian Seminary in Dubuque. And when Dean Hall was still at the Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Davenport, I preached the last two years there about half time. So
you were a big, big hit.
Well, that's good to know.
You know, we talked to Reverend Stacy Fidler about writing sermons, and Roald is the one who got me on this. I never thought about writing sermons because I never write talks. I just, let it happen. But writing sermons, I suppose you really have to be careful. And Stacy had a very careful, purposeful approach. How do you approach writing sermons?
Well, I think the biggest issue is that in seminary, students are usually trained to write out manuscripts. And so when most people write a manuscript, they write it like you would read something. But a sermon isn't reading a manuscript. A sermon is talking to people. And so the real, I think, challenge for clergy is how do you write a sermon that is written as you would speak rather than as you read it. I was thinking about this last night, and I was sitting back by the patio, and six deer walked by. And I thought, now, if you had been there, I would have said to you, look, there are six deer. But I wouldn't write it that way. I would say, in my backyard were six deer. That's a very right. different sentence.
And it's a rather passive thing, too. There were six deers.
Yeah. There were six deers, and I think that's maybe why sometimes many sermons are rather deadly, because they're written in passive tense. Mm-hmm. And I think that the method that I think is important is at the beginning is to think your thought as you would write it and then say it out loud and see if it sounds like that's the way you'd say that same sentence if you were talking directly to a person.
Mm-hmm. I think that is an excellent way of writing. I've tried to write that way myself. Although as I look back at some of the stuff I've written in the past, boy, is it formal! It is too formal. And how do you get though the content and the accuracy and still be informal?
Well, I think that is, of course, the trick, so to speak. How do you speak in a way that is communicates ideas, but in the same time does so in a way that people remember? And while I think clergy tend to believe, because that's what they've been taught, that it's the content that's important, probably what people remember are the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so when many master preachers preach, you will find that there are many stories, because the stories are connected by the theme of the text for the day. And so I think that in writing a sermon, you have to keep in mind your audience. And most of the clergy at the beginning who have become great preachers preach the sermon to themselves so that they hear it out loud and correct the manuscript as they go along. So the manuscript is as you would speak it, not as you would read it.
Mm-hmm. Do you write out your sermons word for word, or how do you begin with an idea, a topic, an angle, or?
Well, I think maybe this would be the point at which to say that in major denominations today, they're all reading the same text on the same Sunday,
right?
And so, if they follow the liturgical year, the generally clergy preach from the Gospel or the Epistle or the Old Testament for the day, so that the theme is essentially set out for you in the major Catholic, Episcopalian, Lutheran, Methodist, Presbyterian, some other denominations all follow the same listing of scriptures, and there are three cycles. There's A, B, C, so you rotate so that in the course of 3 years, parishioners essentially hear most of the Bible being read. And so that system allows clergy to have to choose. It doesn't allow them. It sort of forces them to choose a different theme because it's based on the text for the day. In denominations that don't use that, of course, the pastor is free to preach on what he wishes, he or she wishes. And in many times in the more evangelical churches, the sermon often is related to the Bible text for the day, and it's sort of an exposition of the passages that are being read. So that I think if you're asking about theme, what do you start with? You start with the lectionary, as it's called, and you read the text for the day and see what it is, what's the theme that they've put together, and then that is the basis around which you build your sermon. But I think the really interesting aspect for preaching is how do you wrap together life experiences with the theme?
Yeah, it would seem to me, I know many people complain about being confined or limited or censored, and yet it always strikes me that if you're forced to stay within limits, that forces you to be ingenious, to be inventive.
Well, the argument for the lectionary is that it sort of prevents clergy from having a hobby horse, which they preach on Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, because if you follow the texts for the Sundays, you are a whole variety of topics. And those who are familiar with the church here know that from the first Sunday of Advent till Pentecost, all the texts during that half of the year relate to the life of Jesus. And from Pentecost until the next Advent, they all relate to Christian living, so that there's sort of the Lord's half of the year, as it used to be called, and our half of the year. But it sort of gives you a variety of texts.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever find yourself having to sort of alter what you're doing in the middle of a sermon when you sense that an audience or...
Well, I think one does do that. I have done that. I think that usually happens because something significant has happened in the course of preaching the sermon. Some person faints or has a heart attack, or you see somebody sitting out there and you feel that you need to address some issue related to that person's life. But I think that most people, most clergy who do still write manuscripts generally don't deviate.
Do you write manuscripts?
I still write a manuscript.
Yeah, it's.
And then are you reading from it?
No, I have a photographic memory, so once I write the sermon and have read it a few times.
But what comes out is pretty much what you have written,
yes,
is it?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that I think that I was trying to think of some examples, and I think the task is to try and come up with experiences that wrap into the sermon. And I often used to say, maybe I should back up and say, before I decided to go into hospital chaplaincy, which led me into marriage and family therapy, I was thinking of going back to graduate school and preaching or homiletics. So it's why it's always been a fascinating dimension of life. But I think that good preachers generally have lots of life experiences. And they are people who are approachable. And people come up and talk to them, and they see experiences that they can pull into a sermon. I'll give you an illustration of that. My co-author for one of my books is a man in Minneapolis who is a Dominican priest and is the pastor at at St. Albert the Great, and he's also the 5 o'clock preacher at the Basilica of St. Mary in Minneapolis, the co-cathedral, and he is a master at this. And several years ago, I happened to be in Minneapolis, so I was with him, and he was telling me he'd just come back from doing a wedding in Montana. And he had was driving through those lonely parts of Montana, and he decided he needed some coffee, and the only place of food in this little town was the bar. So he walked into the bar, and he said, "Would you by any chance have a cup of coffee?" And the woman looked at him, and she said, "Yes, I do." She said, "Father, Son, and Holy Ghost?" He said, "Pardon?" She said, "Father, Son, and Holy Ghost?" He says, "I don't know what you're talking about." She said, "Coffee with cream and sugar?" Well, it so happened that was Trinity Sunday when I was there, and he used that in the sermon, as have some other clergy in town right here who I've shared this story with. And as Joe said to me, it's the best illustration of the Trinity he's ever had.
Very good. Stories are Gospels are full of parables.
Of course they are.
You teach in stories, and that's what people really want to hear.
But then there's the other task as a writer, and that is, how do you take a story that I would tell you, as I just did, and how do I write that down in the manuscript so it comes out the way I just said it?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the difficult issue.
Okay, how do you do it?
Well, I do it by saying it out loud to myself. I preach as I write. I don't sort of write as a
even as you're just sitting down writing?
Right.
I mean, you say
right
it out loud.
Right. Well, I've written 5 books, and I've done all of them
right
by dictation.
That's
and
it.
So,
okay.
Yeah, my son gave me a device called Dragon.
Yes.
I'm afraid it's been a couple of years now, and I've never attached it to my computer, where you talk and the words appear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I ought to do if I were not so lazy or fearful of fooling with computers, that's what I ought to do. I think the further thing is you have to teach it. It has to get accustomed to your voice, and you have to say things like paragraph and period and so on. But dictation is, that's a very seductive thought.
Well, it works there. However, the task is the other way, to speak it the way you'd read it,
mm-hmm,
because you're speaking for a reading audience, and so it is an adjustment for people to try and imagine what the person on the other end is hearing. And I think that there are some examples of people who can who speak extemporaneously in a very, very fluid manner. I was watching the Roosevelts the other night, and certainly FDR had an ability to speak off the cuff, so to speak, in a very personal way. But the task in trying to convert all of our thoughts into words that people can understand is to find the way you can approach people so that they hear what you're saying. And I think that's always what the difference between the master speaker or master preacher and the sort of ordinary one.
Do you have an imagined audience? It seems to me one of the problems with a sermon, and I suppose that's true of a classroom too, is that no two people in that audience are sort of at the same place in their faith journey.
Well, that's correct. The no two people are, nor does probably anyone ever really see anything exactly the same. And Harry Emerson Fosdick, which was one of the great preachers of America in the early 20th century, once said that sermons at their best are group therapy. And I think what he was trying to communicate was that you're speaking to people's needs. And there were certainly a whole host of early 20th century preachers who did that. And they tried to pick up topics that they garnered from their counseling sessions with parishioners. And so they would preach on the themes that would come about as they talked with people in everyday life. So one of the great preachers had this book, When the Lamplight Flickers, and he wrote about things like, why does God allow children to die, and all those kinds of questions that perplex people about life. And so I think that many times clergy who have a lot of contact with people can pick up those themes and move them into a sermon, but not every sermon fits every hearer.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've found that in giving talks, you can soften an audience up and bring them together by telling funny stories. And then once you've got them in that mood, it's as if you've assembled them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can say something serious. But that whole idea of assembling them, of bringing them to the same place, is tricky. And do you think of that? Is that the what place does humor have in sermons?
Well, it certainly has a place. Some people can do humor better than others. I know a number of what I would consider very good preachers who always try to think every Sunday of how they can open their sermon with something that is humorous, whether it's a story or an experience or an event, because humor does have a way, as you said, of softening or lubricating an audience.
Yeah, that's true. But I've also heard ministers try humor and have it fall flat, and that's deadly.
Well, yes, of course that is, because you know, you're not David Letterman at 11:30 at night. So it's, you know, if he makes a boo-boo as he did the other night, you know, it's different than when you're standing up Sunday morning and you try humor and it falls flat.
Do your sermons tend to have a certain length?
Well, this is, of course, a denominational thing. Churches that don't have communion or the Eucharist as part of their service tend to preach long. By long, I mean 20 to 25 minutes. Liturgical churches tend to preach somewhere between 10 and 15. And so I'm usually at the 15 because that's usually where I'm preaching.
Mm-hmm. Kind of an in-between, something that one size fits all. Huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we still have congregations that are by and large mixed. By that I mean people are attending a church, but they've come from different backgrounds. So if you're a five-minute preacher, which, you know, there are some churches have had, you know, there's a church in town who is always known for having the shortest mass in town, you know, those people get very uncomfortable when the sermon goes in their mind on and on. You know, my father used to say, in my home Mennonite church, he'd often say to the pastor who'd come to our gas station, he'd say to the, well, pastor, he'd say, remember, when you're preaching, if you can't strike oil in 15 minutes, don't drill.
Do you collect your sermons?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you publish them?
No, I never have.
What Do you happens? Reuse them?
No.
Well, what happens to them?
Well, they're sitting in a file cabinet.
Is there a reason you don't reuse them? Pull some old things.
Well,
out
of course, if you're preaching every Sunday for 20 years, you're going to need to recycle.
Right.
And what I have gone back to occasionally is a story that I have used before in another context that I want to use again.
Yeah, well, when you're my age, you tell your stories over and over again. And that's always embarrassing.
Well, by the way, that's what one of the jokes, you know, with the very young, you have to repeat over and over again so they learn. With the very old, you have to listen to them over and over again as they repeat.
Bill Hebert, thank you very much. Executive Director of Marriage and Family Counseling. He's also a Methodist minister who is, I must say, noted for his sermons. Next is not a sermon, but we do have Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac.